Wisconsin Conversation, real information. Live from Lake Wissota, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, here we are, and good morning. Welcome to the State of Wisconsin Sense on the shores of Lake Wissota. It is Wednesday, September 21st, 48 days until Election Day. Coming up this morning, Ben Wickler, chair of the State Democratic Party, gives his overview of the 2022 election. John Calabrese talks about a unique referendum on the ballot in Dunn County, where voters are being asked, should Congress create a national health insurance program? You know, like pretty much every other developed country on earth. And we talk with one of the UW health nurses involved in the effort to improve working conditions by getting their union membership recognized. We will do that along with our usual Wednesday 10 o'clock hour guests, Dr. Kristen Lyerly and Kirk Bangstead of the Minocqua Brewing Company Super PAC. This is the part of the program where I talk about weather and sports. Which one should we get out of the way first? Let's do the weather.
It's tough.
Let's do the weather, it's because tough. Thankfully for me, the thunderstorms really started rolling in about the time that I was going to swear off the Brewers forever. So we'll start there first. Very stormy across parts of western and central Wisconsin. Hopefully not in any severe damaging way. And I guess, Luke, the Madison area got some like golf ball size hail and stuff in some places yesterday afternoon too, right?
Yeah, while I was on the air yesterday, it started downpouring. And apparently across the east side of Madison and all the way up to our 1580 tower in Columbus, Wisconsin, there was hail. And large pieces of hail.
I got reports of large hail here in western Wisconsin too, and fortunately not here on Lake Wissota, but it was one of the more impressive lightning displays before it got to us. I mean, we're looking to the west, and it's looking like the laboratory of an evil scientist, the way the lightning is dancing across the clouds. And we thought, well, this is it. But by the time it got here, I mean, it wasn't cloud to ground lightning, I'm very thankful to say, but it was something that would definitely keep you up for a while. And it was still super warm. You know, we actually put on the air conditioning one last time, and I'm sure it's the last time I turned it on. Our air conditioning unit is coming up on 30 years old. So as I heard it, you know, click to life, I'm like, come on, buddy, one more time, just one more. And maybe we'll replace you in the spring. And it worked. And the white noise helped drown out the thunderstorm. We were hoping to watch. We had started to watch on Netflix the new stand-up comedy special from Patton Oswalt had just dropped. And we're laughing at it, you know, because, of course, he begins by talking about being a man in his 50s and how everything just breaks. That might sound familiar if you listen to this program for any amount of time.
Pat, did you find that at all relatable at all?
So much so. But here's what was equally relatable. Because we're watching Netflix through our cable box, when weather alerts come on, you know, it always interrupts whatever program you're watching. Turns out it works with Netflix too. It interrupted that to give you the very generic, you know, and you know, the National Weather Service has issued such and such. And so, of course, so in old man fashion, knowing that after the third interruption for a severe thunderstorm warning, we're like, that's enough of that. And again, we had turned off the Brewers already too. So I did the other old man thing. We went out to the back deck and we watched the weather coming. You know, we watched the lightning display and made sure that everything was tucked away. So we got to watch the one show because we didn't get to watch the other show, and we really didn't like the baseball show.
Well, I was going to say, that's what those weather updates are for. They're saying, come on, go take a look outside. This stuff is pretty cool that's coming.
It was. Like I said, it looked really ominous, but thankfully it wasn't here, and hopefully things worked well around everybody else. So about those Brewers, they were up 4-0. It didn't start out great. Aaron Ashby had just come back for his first pitching stint since being out with an injury for a couple of weeks. He promptly loads the bases in the top of the first, but thankfully no runs come across after 31 pitches. He only pitched two innings. And so between Ashby and then Strzelecki and then Hobie Milner, they retired 14 consecutive batters. they take Milner out and they put in Brad Boxberger. Again, we're up 4-0, but then he gives up a single. He hits a batter, and then a single, and then a 3-run homer. Suddenly it's 4-3. Well, let's bring in Taylor Rogers, who was supposed to be the answer. Remember, we traded with Josh Hader. They both were good relievers. They both go to opposite teams, and they both, I don't have a euphemism with clean language I can use, but they did a bad job. For Taylor Rogers, it was walk, 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 grand slam. And they're down 7-3, and that was the final score. So they will do it one more time with the Mets at 1:10 this afternoon.
No, I think they got one back, though. It was 7-5 was the final score.
Oh, did they get
they
okay.
They got one back.
That's what I was. Look, even when I look back at the review this morning, that's when I quit. I'm like, I'm out. I'm out.
Jace Peterson was the tying run at the top of the eighth, I think, and he struck out. And there was a runner on. He could have tied it up with a homer, I believe, at the top of the eighth.
No, I did. I saw it. I've tuned it out. I was just like, and as soon as the moment the third out was done in the bottom of the ninth, I mean, we put on Netflix right away. Didn't want to watch the post game or anything. But anyway, we've got daytime baseball today. Coming up after the break, John Calabrese with an interesting healthcare referendum in Dunn County. You're up north. Back. This is Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitlow. It's a Wednesday morning, 48 days until Election Day, and we have spent so much time talking about the big marquee races for governor and for U.S. Senate. We've spoken a little bit about some of the down ballot races, Attorney General, Secretary of State, State Legislature. We've mentioned that there are dozens of school referenda on the ballot for reasons I've already ranted about. Because they're wholly unnecessary if the state legislature would do its job. But now we're going to focus on a rather unique referendum, I think designed to get a conversation going or to shift a conversation on the issue of healthcare. John Calabrese joins us now from the Menominee area, one of the folks who has put forth the effort to get a question on the ballot asking about a national health insurance program. John, good to have you here. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. It's nice to be here.
Let's start with the question itself, and then we'll get into the background of how it got there. What is it that Dunn County voters are being asked to choose? What's the question that they'll face on November 8th?
The question on the ballot reads as follows. Shall Congress and the President of the United States enact into law the creation of a publicly financed nonprofit national health insurance program that would fully cover medical care costs for all Americans?
There it is. Pretty straightforward. So let me ask it in an outlandish way first, and then we'll get to the real basics behind it. This sounds very revolutionary, like no place on earth has something like this. Is that the case?
Well, you know, there are similar health insurance programs in many industrialized countries that cover healthcare costs for their citizens. And you know, when we put the language together, it does seem very broad, a publicly financed, not-for-profit health insurance program to cover all the costs for healthcare for Americans. What we wanted to do, and the reason that we focused on this, it was born in the healthcare committee of a group called Our Wisconsin Revolution, since you mentioned revolution. And we wanted to do something that would have some impact. And I'm on the Dunn County Board of Supervisors, and my idea was to go through, to go to the county board, because my thought was that because of how much money the county spends on health insurance, I felt like there was a way that you could change this conversation, because in Dunn County, it's a rural county outside of Menominee. It leans conservative. It went for Donald Trump. And I know that many of the people on the 29-member Board of Supervisors lean conservative themselves. But on the county board, we don't really talk politics that much. It's just trying to get the business of the county done. And so what I found, surprisingly and pleasantly, was that the people there are largely just good people. And without talking about Medicare for all or single-payer health care or the political division that those terms can bring, I saw people who looked at the vouchers for the county each month, and they would see the numbers and they would say, my goodness, Dunn County, one of just 72, just one of 72 counties in Wisconsin, spends on average $500,000 a month on health insurance for its employees. And so at the end of the year, when we're balancing the budget and we're, you know, cutting $1,000 here and moving $500 here every month, when there's $500,000, I would see people who, whether they were left or right or however they voted in November, were just pained over all that money. And so I thought, if we could, how can we bring this issue forward and change it? And so in that committee, we decided that instead of a resolution, maybe a referendum. And we brought it to the county board, and we avoided those buzz terms that could be politicized, and that's where the language came from. And we just asked the supervisors, or me and several local people who came with stories to the public comment, and they said, let the people of Dunn County have this conversation between August and November and see if we can change it from a polarizing issue to something that everyone needs. Everyone ages, everyone gets ill, and you know, maybe we can start to shift it to more of a conversation that's less politicized.
It reminds me of the very many county boards across Wisconsin, again, many of them in rural areas dominated by conservative membership, who nevertheless approved resolutions calling for fair maps, calling for an end to gerrymandering. And again, you would think that that was a nonpartisan concept, that you would have fair maps. And I see the same thing here, that it seems at the county board level, that's where you can strip away a lot of the artificial partisanship, I would argue, and just stick to the root issue of what is the best way, or what is a better way, to cover health care for the people of your county.
Yeah, that's right. And many of the people who came to speak in public comment appealed to the fact that the county board is approachable. It's the closest body of government, and it's responsive. And I've seen people on that board, they listen in the public comment, they listen to their colleagues. And I've seen many people over the years have in their mind a way that they're going to vote on a particular thing. And then listening to testimony, they actually change their mind and then they admit it. And then it's just very rare. You don't see that when you get up to the state level or when you get up to the national level. And so appealing to the county board to say, just let us have this conversation. And what you're saying about the fair maps, I've seen that too in terms of the levy limit laws and expanding Medicare. You know, the same thing is when these people, good people who get into county government, not to get rich or anything, because that's not happening. They just care about the county. They say, wait a minute, this Medicare expansion is available to us, and we're having to cut jobs at our nursing home. We're going to have to cut our home health care program. They're like, wait a minute, why are we not accepting this? And so that's what happens at the county level. And that's why bringing things like this to them made a lot of sense to us.
I get asked that all the time from being a legislator, when people ask, why are things so polarizing at that level? And I tell them that from that level on up, there is just so much money involved in terms of political money, that there's no longer wiggle room for a lot of people to do what you just described happens at the county board level, which is change your mind about something, listen to arguments, compromise, come to an agreement. There's less incentive than ever to do that at the state and federal levels. And so it's so refreshing, frankly, to hear that, you know, these good, honest discussions can happen at the county level. So let's come to those, come back to those discussions for just a moment on healthcare. Talk to me about the genuine concerns that were first brought up when you and others proposed this. What either questions or myths or misconceptions were you asked to address first?
Well, you know, what was interesting was that the public comment, it ranged from people telling horror stories about healthcare and bankruptcies and just the fear and the anxiety that everyone deals with, to just the frustration of the paperwork and then to just appealing to the board to have this question. And there were some former board members who spoke in public comment, talking about how much money the county spends and the administrative costs and all of that. So the public comments ranged. And the questions from the board members were largely about, is this in the purview of the county? Or what will this actually accomplish? And why are we spending our time doing this? How much money will it cost to get on the ballot? But what's fascinating, and the deliberations in the legislative committee and then the full county board, which were recorded, there was nobody who started their comment, no board member who began by saying something akin to, you know, I think this healthcare system is great. I think everything's fine. We don't need to deal with this. Every single person who started to speak started with something like, yeah, we know there's a lot of problems with this system. We know that it doesn't deliver the cost or the care that it should for the cost that it has. Like, I know that this is wrong, but why are we discussing this at the county level? And that was fascinating to me that nobody said, no, I'm happy with this system. I'm not in favor of this.
That's why I find it interesting that, and forgive me while I wander into partisan territory for a moment here, but Republican attacks on the concept of a national publicly funded health insurance program will say something like, the government is going to take away your health insurance. When what I think a lot of people hear is kind of what you just said. Most people think the system is terrible, and I think their response would be, you want to take away my health insurance and replace it with something that might be more stable, have lower administrative costs. I don't have to jump through 10,000 hoops to get something covered. Sign me up for that is what I think people say once they understand the details of the premise. But again, that premise is so prone to these bad faith arguments, you know, about we're going to take away your health insurance. When, John, it sounds like you're talking about replacing a poor system with something more in line with what is being used in much of the rest of the developed world.
That's right. And one of the public commenters talked about, and he sort of cut off at the pass any argument of saying that the government's going to make healthcare decisions for me. And what we're proposing is actually that the government just pays for the system that's already in place. And what everybody knows also, if they're involved in health insurance for themselves or healthcare for their parents or however it works, your health insurance companies are making decisions for you anyway. And many people have those stories of, their doctor says they want to do this, but then they have to check with the health insurance company and it turns out you can't do that. And so people are already feeling that stress. And I think it's getting worse and it's getting ubiquitous that people are wanting to shift the conversation. And that's what we're going to try to spread around the county between now and November to let's think about this like we think about the fire department. You know, everybody knows we need a fire department. How are we going to do that?
Is this something in the few seconds we have before a commercial break? We'll get into more details on this. But is it something that is there a lot of grassroots canvassing of voters going on for this right now? Or are you just putting the referendum up and letting the chips fall?
We have a plan, and we're actually this week printing up flyers to do some lit drops. And we're going to have some public conversations about it as well, a couple events. So, yeah, we're going to be spreading the word.
Great. We'll talk more about that with John Calabrese from the Dunn County Board about a referendum about whether the nation should set up a publicly funded health insurance plan. We will have that after this break. This is Up North News. If you'd like to sign up for our daily newsletter, go to upnorthnewswi.com, click newsletter in the top banner, or find our coverage on social media. Just search for Up North News WI. We'll be back. You're Up North.
Wisconsin Conversation, real information. Live from Lake Wissota, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Welcome back. We're talking to John Calabrese from the Dunn County Board. A referendum is going to be put up on November 8th that asks Dunn County residents about whether Congress and the president should set up a publicly funded health insurance plan to cover medical costs for all Americans. It's advisory, of course, but it might be, depending on the results, the first of many such questions being asked around the country that would essentially try to take at least some of the partisanship and ideology out of the whole healthcare reform question. John, I asked you in the commercial break, I want to ask it again. When we talk about a national health insurance plan here, folks will remember that when the Affordable Care Act was debated and then passed, there had been all this talk of a, quote unquote, public option, essentially saying, to the private sector, hey, you guys talk about competition all the time, private schools versus public schools. Why are you afraid of competition? By that same token, we should have a public option that is also out there. Well, because of one person, Senator Joe Lieberman at the time, that had to be pulled. And so we don't have that right now. If what's called for in this referendum were to pass, is this more of setting up that public option, or is this meant to be essentially a replacement for all of the private sector insurance and bureaucracy that we have now?
I think the latter. I think it's said to be a replacement for that. And the reason why is that anybody who follows the machinations of how the lobbying and the donation system works in Washington and at the state level, if there were simply a public option and then still we had all these health insurance companies influencing the government as they do, it would stand to reason that they would start to find ways to send the sickest patients into the public option and sort of dismantle it along the way. And it's because they've proven, this is not just a theory, they've proven that in many ways that they would not stop. The privatization would continue. In fact, currently, and many people don't know about this because it's a little bit under the radar, Medicaid and Medicare are being privatized slowly as well. It was a program that was hatched at the end of the Obama administration, and Trump seized on it, and Biden is continuing it. And it has many names. It's called the Direct Contracting Entities, and there are some other names to it. And what's happening is doctors, and often without the patient's knowledge, are sort of contracting out to private companies that are finding ways to charge Medicare and Medicaid the most that they can. And there are some people in Congress speaking up against it. And that's just an example of how these for-profit companies operate, because they need to show profit. And we have to take the profit motive out of healthcare.
For those folks who don't live in or around Dunn County, we need to make sure that something's made clear here. This is not, Dunn County is not Dane County. This is not some kind of a leftist enclave. This is a county that in 2020 went 56% for Trump, 42% for Biden. And John, you, as one of the leading advocates, you've run for assembly a couple of times. People know your Democratic roots, and yet the county board approved it unanimously, putting this referendum on the ballot. Because again, we're talking about transcending party and actually looking at the bottom line of what this costs just one county, not to mention all of the people, all of the other entities, everything that's out there. These are people in a conservative-leaning county who are looking at this very clear-eyed as far as whether it is the best use of our dollars.
Yeah, that's right. And I tell you, it's like I said earlier, it has to do with the culture on the board. And you know, if I was in the state assembly, you know, I would probably sign on to the Badger Care for All bill that seems to come every couple years and do what you could. But I wouldn't be under any pretenses that I could, you know, start to shift people's minds too much, because I've seen how entrenched people are on each side. But at the county level, people have come to see, you know, even though many of the people on there know I ran for assembly, but it does not come up. And you start to build relationships, you start to have conversations, and I think people there don't see me as a mainstream Democrat or anything like that. We just do not talk about it. And I think in tandem with that culture on the board, there's also a shifting happening in the whole country, where there's various issues are moving from one side to the other, and they're kind of melded in the middle. And there's all sorts of polling about that too, how just the trust in the security state has shifted. Like, people on the right are more skeptical of that, and now the people on the left are more accepting of it. And I remember Trump said in his first run, and you know what Trump says obviously comes with several grains of salt, and he says what the room wants to hear. But when he was interviewed at one point, he said, everybody's going to be covered for healthcare. Everybody's going to have healthcare. And the person interviewing him said, well, who's going to pay for it? And Trump said, the government's going to pay for it. He just said it plainly. And obviously that didn't come to pass, and he didn't push for it. But I remember talking to people out here in Dunn County when that happened, and that spoke to people. And so, you know, because everybody has a story, everybody is in this system. And I feel like this is a time in the country when we can seize on that, and there can be such a groundswell of support for, you know what, we deserve to have healthcare. We have enough money to send billions of dollars every week to the military contractors for Ukraine. Let's get this done. And if there's enough of a groundswell, I feel like one of the two parties or a new emerging party or somebody is going to seize on it and just get it done, and it can be politically beneficial, and I feel like there's a real opening to talk to everybody about this, no matter who they vote for in November.
When we talk about public sentiment on an idea like this, it really depends, I think, in part on how you frame the question. I mean, the classic example is people who said they were opposed to the Affordable Care Act because they'd heard all the horror stories, but then when you rattled off all of the elements of them, members of the public would say, oh yeah, I favor that. And it turns out they actually favor it all. It's just as soon as you package it, or, you know, somebody's able to, you know, paint it with a political brush, then it gets tarnished. When you check public perceptions on, you know, something like, you know, Medicare for All, where you are no longer paying insurance premiums, but you may end up paying more in taxes. You know, the trade-off is that you don't have to jump through all the insurance company hoops anymore, but there's also this public perception that, you know, certain people are going to fan those flames, that this is going to lead to immense overutilization of the healthcare system and drive up all of our costs. What are your feelings on whether we're going to see overutilization of the system, or if we're actually going to solve the problems that are caused by underutilization of the system, that people who don't get treated right away because they can't afford it?
Yeah, and those numbers of the people who don't get treated right away because they can't afford it are huge, and probably a lot bigger than we can even quantify, because how do you know? You know, many of those questions, like, is it going to be overutilized? Is it going to be worth it? Those are all going to come up eventually. And I don't know. But what I do know is that the stress of not having insurance, the stress of worrying if you're going to go beyond your deductible, and what happens if your kids get hurt, and you know, skipping an ambulance ride. Like, there is a hovering stress that stays over everybody in this country, and small businesses don't hire. And I mean, I think that you know, many of those questions, I just don't foresee people racing off to the doctor every minute if they just have a cold or something. I don't think that's a thing. I mean, it could be, but you know, people don't like to go to the doctor. They don't like to be in there all the time, generally speaking. And I just think that this system is so unsustainable and so predatory and sort of an international scandal that we need to address it and then address the problems that come afterwards.
I asked if there had been a lot of activity involved in this yet from the standpoint of, you know, advocacy for or even advertising against. And you told me, you know, off air that you haven't seen that big sweep of scary advertising, you know, sponsored by the health insurance industry about all of the evils of this, you know, national health insurance program coming to fruition. And I think, frankly, that just tells you how unique and, I guess, pioneering a question like this is. I mean, if this referendum, again, advisory only, but if it were to pass, how many more counties do you feel would put that on the ballot in the next possible election cycle?
Well, we're hoping many, and it is under the radar now. You know, there was I did an interview with WPR, and they posted that Common Dreams, which is a national outlet, spoke about it, and I'm going to be on a program in Kentucky with Kay Tillo, the lady who wrote that article, later this month. And so, you know, it will start to spread. And we, as our Wisconsin Revolution, have been in touch with county board members in other counties, Outagamie, Marathon, and there's some talk of Portage County and then up in Washburn. But what catches people's eyes the most is that it passed unanimously in Dunn County, a rural conservative leaning county. And that's really speaking to people. And so I would imagine that if it spreads more and more, then there will be some pushback, but that's expected. And, you know, we'll be ready for it.
Let's take a step back to what is being dealt with in the current political landscape. And you've mentioned it once or twice, and that is expanding Medicaid. Again, this was part of the Affordable Care Act, where the federal government would provide a substantial amount of money to states to extend or expand, rather, their Medicaid program to cover more people who are close to the poverty line. Now, in Wisconsin, Medicaid is known as Badger Care, and Wisconsin is now one of the very few states that has not yet expanded Medicaid, strengthened Badger Care, accepted that money, covered that many more people. Because Republicans have controlled the legislature this entire time since the Affordable Care Act passed, and these are my words, not yours, they're still having a temper tantrum about it, that it passed, and doing whatever possible not to look like something successful. But what I'll ask you bluntly, John, is from a Dunn County standpoint, how much different would things be if the legislature had accepted the federal funding, expanded Medicaid, strengthened Badger Care for all these years?
It would be significantly different. And I've been on the board now for 4.5 years. And each year, the legislative committee of Dunn County puts together a legislative agenda. And then they have a special meeting where they invite the state lawmakers who represent Dunn County. And then they present the agenda to them. And every single time, they ask them to expand, to accept the Medicare expansion, the Medicaid expansion, because we have a Dunn County nursing home here, which is a focal point, and it's wonderful, and it's, everybody loves it. And the reimbursement costs are costing that Neighbors of Dunn County nursing home money every single year. And so it would have made a big difference, but they just refused to do it. And they're just stubborn now, and they don't want to be seen as going back on what they've said, I suppose.
Again, just letting that partisanship get in the way of good policy, which I think Dunn, more county boards like the Dunn County Board are going to be taking up and discussing with their voters. John Calabrese, thank you so much. I really appreciate the background on this and wish you all the best.
Thank you. Take care.
All right. Have a great day. When we come back, we'll continue this hour's conversation. And then in our next hour, Ben Wickler, state chair of the Democratic Party. And then Kirk Bankstead, Kristen Lyerly, and more about the UW nurses seeking union recognition in our 10 o'clock hour. You're up north. We're going to have some fun in our 10 o'clock hour later with Kirk Bankstead and Kristen Lyerly, mostly because, well, it's all based in a song. And I'm not going to give away the song yet, but if you know what date it is on the calendar, you'll get it. And then we're just going to do a little bit more with that particular musical group. So you'll want to hang around later in our 10 o'clock hour for a little fun and games with some song lyrics. Coming up on Friday, Sean Fetteplace of Main Street Alliance, Wisconsin. We've had him on previously to talk about the group that, my words, not his, is the small business alternative to Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. In other words, the people who are actually advocating for the real entrepreneurs of Wisconsin who want things like expanded Badger Care so that their employees can be covered. They know that, you know, if their employees have better health insurance coverage, they're not going to take as many sick days. They're not going to delay care till they get really sick and have to miss more days. So we'll ask Sean what Main Street Alliance has been doing to talk to its members about the issues that are involved in the campaign. If you'd like to get in touch with the show, 715-388-7155. And our email address is radio@upnorthnewswi.com. When John mentioned the Dunn County Board and, you know, their center of care or county nursing home, I forget what it's called now, which tells you how long it's been. But as a junior reporter, approximately 1 million years ago, I covered not just the Dunn County Board, but the Eau Claire County Board, the Chippewa County Board, the Clark County Board, and probably Barron as well, all on the topic of what to do about their county nursing homes. County nursing homes were a staple of every county. There weren't as many private sector providers anymore. Now we have all kinds of chains and national conglomerates that are running nursing homes. I don't know the degree to which they're, you know, racking up profits or, you know, what they do. All I know is that once upon a time, when those chains weren't around, it was a public service that was performed by the county. As we all know, there was once the, you know, the county old folks home to make sure that people weren't poor and destitute. And people knew that. They paid their taxes for that, knowing that they would work throughout their adult lives, pay their taxes, and that when they got older, if they had a health issue or a financial issue, that those taxes would then be, you know, coming back to them in the form of care close to home. You didn't have to be shipped out to a, you know, a home in the big city. There was some place nearby. But as healthcare costs rose for a host of reasons, again, I think a lot of them involving, you know, private sector and bureaucracy, but certainly other factors as well, you had county boards increasingly struggle with the idea of whether they could afford to continue operating their nursing homes. And in you know, some counties, the decision was made to get out of the nursing home business, which again is fine if there's a private sector entity willing to come in, even better if there's more than one so that there's a degree of competition. Because if not, I mean, you can complain about your taxes all day long, but then when it comes time to, you know, start paying the cost to, you know, a private sector entity, and your issues are with a bureaucracy, you know, in a home office, you know, 1,000 miles away, you suddenly appreciate how much nicer it was to have care close to home. But this is all to underscore the importance of local units of government, like county boards. As I said, I've covered more county board meetings than I could possibly count in more counties all over Wisconsin from various jobs in other parts of the state. And it wasn't just nursing homes. It was something like the landfill. I might have told the story of, you know, my very first beat as a reporter in college was the Eau Claire County Board, and wanting so bad to be more of like the general assignment reporter for like the school board or the city council or something sexy like that. And instead I was assigned not just the county board, but the county board solid waste committee. And when I was rather sad about that, my journalism professor, Henry Lippold, at the time, you know, made clear how vital the issue was and that is where the money is. And it turned out he was absolutely right. We don't appreciate how much work our local governments have to do in something like deciding where the trash is going to go. And is the place where the trash is going safe? Or is it, you know, leaking into the groundwater supply? Are there other hazards there? And so again, one of the things that I've covered over the years is county boards wrestling with the notion of whether they should continue operating a county landfill or can they turn it over to a private entity. And again, a private entity may come in with all kinds of promises in the beginning, but will they continue to keep them as time goes by? And if they don't, if they end up closing the local office and you've got to dial a number and somebody answers overseas, that's a whole different level of service. Yes, your taxes may have come down, but you know, what did you get in return? So these are fair questions to talk to somebody when they're running for local office, but better yet, I would encourage people to run for local office, to serve on your school board or on your town board. It is so much better than being the person I talked about yesterday, I think it was, when I talked about the grid of people, and in the lower corners were the people who have strong feelings, but they only shout at their TV, or they shout at their radio, or they put flaming comments up on Facebook, but they never vote, or they never serve. And I never tire of being encouraged by the people who step up, like Lou Anne Bird, who we talked to, I think, week before last, who's running for state assembly. You know, the sweetest older lady who wants to give back and serve in her community that way. It is never too late to step up. There's never a wrong time to step up and serve. And don't just wait until you're angered by a particular issue. You know, whether it's the evils of CRT, if you could even really define what that is, or you're upset because of the people who are fighting the evils of CRT, who don't really know how to describe it, whatever it is. Anger can motivate a lot of people to run, and that's fine, but I'd much rather sit here for this, you know, couple of minutes and preach about the need to serve for good reasons, to step up and say, this is what our kids need. Is somebody on the school board? Or this is what my neighbors need, is somebody on the town board? Meeting those people has been the absolute highlight of my careers, both as a reporter and then as a politician and now as a talk show host, is the people who will take the time, become advocates, and do what we do best in a small D democracy, is that kind of civic engagement. That's what makes it all work and helps offset all the, you know, the dark money and all the other influences that taint things. The only way to overcome the ills of democracy is more democracy. We'll talk about that with Ben Wickler, state chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, in our next hour. You're up north.